Maybe tonight we'll talk about throwing frisbees. Rav Chal reiterates the general point, the key point that he's been making, and then he surges forward. Here we are in the middle of the first parak. Kelalo shel davar. He recaps the core idea here. The central idea of this opening parak, ha'adam lo nivra ba'avur matzavo ba'olam hazeh, ela ba'avur matzavo ba'olam ba. The ultimate purpose of creation is not where you're at and what you're achieving here, but it's what here achieves for there. It's ultimately our stay in Olam Hazeh is profoundly purposeful. Our stay in Olam Hazeh matters very, very deeply, because even more than what we accomplish, what we build here, it's that what we build here builds an Olam Haba. Matzavo ba'Olam Hazeh, our state, our status, our situation, Olam Hazeh, is profoundly significant as an emtsa'i l'matzavo ba'Olam Haba, as a means to the ends of Olam Haba. Shehu tachlisov. That's the ultimate goal. The ultimate destination is what you're creating, what you're shaping for your Olam Haba. Al kein timtza ma'amarecha chameinu zichrom levacha kulam b'signon echad. Chazal, many comments, many descriptions that Chazal have. Midamim ha'olam hazeh l'mekom uzman ha'achana. Olam haba l'mekom ha'menucha v'achilas ha'mucham kvar. So many metaphors that Chazal use in various midrashim that compare Olam Hazeh to the place of preparation and Olam Haba to the place of rest, to the place of eating, to the place of enjoying that which has already been crafted. For instance, Olam Hazeh Domo L'Prozdar, since I already earlier mentioned the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, it describes Olam Hazeh as a lobby to Olam Haba, and then it gives you several others, a selection from the Talmud Bavli and from Midrashay Rabba, Hayom la'aso sam v'lo l'machar la'aso sam. Commenting on the pasuk, the mitzvahs are for doing today. Hayom la'aso sam u'machar u'kabel sar. He meant today, Olam Hazeh, this stage in our existence is for doing, and the next stage is for receiving, enjoying the sar. Mishatar be'erev Shabbos yochel b'Shabbos. The shalat metaphor. If you want to enjoy chalent on a Shabbos morning, you got to put the chalent up on a Friday. So Olam Hazeh is when you put the chalent up. Olam Haba is when you enjoy that chalent. Olam Hazeh dom liyabasha, Olam Haba liyam. Olam Hazeh is like the port on dry land that gets you to the sea voyage. V'cha'el l'rabba mazerdach. Many other such descriptions that Chazal give of that relationship, the Olam Hazeh is critically important. What we do here matters tremendously, even more than you would think by looking at what things look like over here. Our masim are even more significant. Our decisions are even more significant than they appear to be, because they create not only Olam Hazeh, but they create our Olam Haba. He had already spoken earlier in the parak. This awareness that Olam Hazeh is Olam HaNisayon, and Olam Haba is Olam HaTanug, and each one has been calibrated and designed by the Ribbono Shel Olam, optimized for its purpose, that explains why Olam Hazeh is full of Nisyonos. He's described earlier in the parak. That explains not only why Olam Hazeh is full of so many Nisyonos, but why they are, where they surround us. Olam Hazeh is Olam HaNisayon in full stereo. There are nisyonos from all sides. Every type of situation, Olam Hazeh, whether at first it appears to be easier or harder, Oni, Osha, Shalva, Yisurin, everything presents challenges, everything presents opportunities. And he had already said previously, we saw this last time we learned, that the fact that in all of Olam Hazeh was designed, the purpose of all of Olam Hazeh is to serve as the Olam HaNisayon of human beings, that explains why our decisions, hopefully good decisions, but our good decisions or bad decisions not only raise or lower us, but raise or lower the entire universe. Now, he presents two ways of looking at this, so that it just sort of jumps out at you. Isn't it obvious that this is the case? Isn't it obvious We'll see what he's about to say. That in fact, Om Hazeh is Om HaNisayin. That in fact, Om Hazeh is that what you see is not what you get. That there's more here than meets the eye. Two ways in which that leaps to the eye. And then he's going to talk practically about how this should matter in our lives. After all, the purpose of this whole discussion of Om Hazeh, Om Abba, as he had opened this parak, was this is the Yisoda Chassid for Shor Shavodah Tmima. These ideas, which are fascinating, but they seem very abstract, these are actually the foundation of real growth. So we'll begin to see how this becomes the foundation, why this matters in terms of one's avoda. So first, why this idea leaps to the eye. Why it's so clear. Why it's so clear that there must be more to life than merely what meets the eye. There must be more meaning to Olam Hazeh than merely Olam Hazeh itself. This is number one. The Tirah B'Emes. Say if you think about it. Kfar lo yuchal shum bal seicha lahamin shetachas b'riyas ha'adam hu matzav Olam Hazeh. No thinking, rational person could really believe that our purpose is the purpose of our lives in Olam Hazeh exists, that the purpose exists within Olam Hazeh, that there's nothing more than what you see here. If you're a rational person, who believes in a creator? Because if you believe that God created you, if you're a believer, a religious believer, Mahim Chaya Adam, so you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu just created us for here? Mahim Chaya Adam HaAdam Olam Hazeh. How long are our lives? Who has total simcha in this world? Who has entirely only simcha? How long does a person live? Less than a century. Our lives are full of so much struggle and so much suffering. There's such so much stuff that we have to deal with. And life is limited. Life in Olam Hazeh is finite. He said, "Echad mina elfa yimatzei sheyarbelo olam lo hanaos v'shalva mitas." How many? What percentage of the population lives a life of total bliss from year to year to year to year in this world? It's rare. It's rare. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kol yachal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent. He can create whatever it is that he wants. So it's hard to imagine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates such an imperfect world. If the purpose of all, if the purpose of us was just this world, just what you see is what you get, if there is no Olam Haba, how would a believer make sense of that? He makes sense of the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us for just this? This doesn't look like the end of the story in a very effective way. Some people are very happy. Many people are not. And not only that, not only is it true that our lives are full of struggle and a lot of ups and downs, if the picture is only that which happens to Olam Hazeh, but he also says, if it's point number two, is if our entire purpose was just to exist in this physical universe, why are human beings such a radical fusion of physical and spiritual? We look around at the cosmos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created spiritual creatures. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created many physical creatures, living physical creatures, non-living physical creatures. But human beings are this radical fusion of an animal body with a spiritual neshama. But why? If we're just here for this, if the entire story of human existence is only Olam Hazeh, im tachas b'riyas ha'adam ha'ilotzarach Olam Hazeh, so then lo hayetzarach im tnei zeh she'tinu pachbo neshama kol kach chashuva ve'elyona. Then why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us such a glorious piece of equipment? Such an ethereal neshama. Why do we have a spiritual neshama if we're only meant to operate in Olam Hazeh? Doesn't make any sense. Shatia Gedola Yosef and Amalachim Atzma says, our neshama is a spiritual entity. It's greater than the Malachim, more entirely spiritual. He says, well, you know, if you look at a sports car, you look at an Alfa Romeo, you look at a Porsche, and it can do 150, 170, 220 miles an hour. So even if I've only lived my life on city streets, when I come across a car that can easily go to 220, clearly there must be other places to drive out there beyond city streets. Even if I've lived my entire life within a couple of blocks of my house, clearly there's more out there than the city asphalt. Otherwise, why would there be such an exquisite piece of equipment, this sports car, this world-class sports car that clearly wasn't meant for just city streets? There must be racing tracks out there. There must be something more out there. Certainly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created me with all this glory, that world-class sports car, with a world-class neshama. There must be more to life than just this physical reality. Our neshama isn't calibrated for Olam HaZeh, goes on to say. Our neshama is calibrated for Olam Haba. Ella, skipping out a little bit. So I'd love it ready tonight to see some of that which is practical. Again, as we said, two ways in which it leaps out at us that Briaso Shel Adam Latzava Olam Haba. Two ways in which it leaps out at us, if we look around the world as rational religious people, it leaps out at us that there's more to the story than just this. That we, although right now we exist in Olam HaZeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed us for more than just Olam HaZeh. Olam HaZeh is incredibly significant because it's the key lever to create our Olam Haba. So then, okay, nitna bo neshama zos. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this incredible sports car. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this extraordinary, exquisite spiritual neshama. Because we're meant to exist both in this largely physical Olam HaZeh and in the spiritual Olam Haba. So now we begin to understand why we, as a creature, human beings, were created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a fusion of a physical guf and a spiritual neshama. Ki loh ra'oi la'avod, we're working to move our neshama forwards. We're working in Olam HaZeh to polish our neshama, to move it forward. Uba yuchal adam l'kabel haschar b'mekom ozmano. And if you look around this world and you say, some people are happy, but there's so much we deal with in Olam HaZeh, is this the entire point? No. We were ultimately created by a good God to operate, to exist in an Olam HaTana that is incredibly pleasurable. Olam Haba. And our neshamos are not calibrated to enjoy the coarser pleasures of Olam HaZeh, but they are designed to fully absorb the ethereal, sublime pleasures of Olam Haba. Neva nechemina, extraordinary. So he says, so we have this idea. We have this paradigm, we have this way of looking at life, this two-stage existence, Olam HaZeh and Olam Haba. And it makes sense, there seems like there's a lot of unfinished business in Olam HaZeh, because in fact, Olam HaZeh is only chapter one of a two-chapter life. And it makes sense that we have equipment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu equips us with a neshama that doesn't seem like it was designed to just to find its meaningfulness, find the satisfaction in Olam HaZeh. No, the neshama will find the satisfaction in Olam Haba. And as he said before, it explains the fact that Olam HaZeh is full of nisyonos. Not necessarily full of final satisfaction, but full of challenge. That makes a lot of sense. Challenge here in this Olam HaNisayim for subsequent joy in Olam Haba. Yeah.
Can I ask something?
If it's directly relevant, if not, but he's about to pivot into something very practical.
Right, that's what I wanted to do before that. It's directly relevant to what we're saying, but if you prefer, I can wait till afterwards or something.
So maybe let's just see where he's going. Let's just see where he's going. He says, Achashed, why is this so practical? Why is this so practical? So already it gives the understanding, the paradigm, the perspective of Olam HaZeh, Olam Haba already helps a lot of things make more sense that we've already seen in past Vadim and tonight. we begin to understand why Alma Zeh is so full of nisyonos. We begin to understand why Alma Zeh might seem unsatisfied. We begin to understand why we have a neshama, and so on and so forth. It helps us make sense of things in terms of hashkafic understanding. But it's also not only helps us answer larger philosophical questions, it's going to be the basis, it's going to be the foundation for more substantive avoda. How? So that's what he begins to talk about now. Now that we've established this understanding, now that we get it, navin miyad, and here we come to the frisbee with which we begin. Navin miyad chomer hamitzvah asher aleinu. This perspective begins to give us a sense of how significant are the mitzvahs that are expected of us. Yikar ha'avoda asher b'yadeinu. We begin to appreciate the significance of the work that we're accomplishing in Olam Hazeh. This looks like a little mitzvah, quote unquote. But this little mitzvah is creating Olam Haba for ourselves. And he says the following. But let me put it in my words. How many of you, let's come back to the frisbee with which we opened. How many of you remember the first time you threw a frisbee? Maybe. Okay. I won't ask you too many hands here. Okay. We want to protect the innocent and the guilty. So if you cast your mind back, if it's not too many decades ago, to remember the first time you picked up a frisbee and gave it a toss. So nowadays, no doubt, you throw a frisbee, it lands exactly in the hands of the child or the grandchild that you're throwing it to. But of course. But once upon a time, the first time you picked up a frisbee, maybe it went something like this. Maybe you took it and you're wound up, you let go, and it starts flying up. It's cresting very nicely. But then as it gets to the top, instead of continuing going straight down, it gets to the top, then all of a sudden, it drops to the side. Up, straight up, and then at the top, it sort of falls off to the side. It ends up landing like 20, 30 feet to the right, or 20, 30 feet to the left. Maybe that happened not just the first time you threw, maybe it's happened more recently also. If you have that picture in your mind, the frisbee, you throw it and it goes up, but then it sort of ends up veering to the side on the way down. How come? Why does that work? Or why does it not work, rather? So a lot of times it has to do with the following. So if you're holding a frisbee, so maybe at some point someone taught you that when you hold a frisbee and you release, you want it to really be flat, horizontally flat, parallel to the ground. And if you're holding it like that, it's going to fly straight. But oftentimes until you build your technique, without even realizing it, it's a little bit tilted this way. A little bit tilted to the right, let's say, 10 degrees off, 15 degrees off. Or if you're a lefty, a little bit tilted to the left like that. Instead of being absolutely straight, it was tilts a little bit. So you might not have noticed it at first, but that little tilt, that divergence from being absolutely flat, when you release, that ends up making it go way, way off. But that's interesting. Because I wasn't holding it absolutely flat, it was a little bit off to the side, that's the way it landed, it went so far to the, veered so far to the right instead of just going straight all the way down. But why? It was only an inch or two off of where it should have been. Instead of being absolutely flat, it was an inch or two. One end was an inch or two higher than the other. So you would have said, okay, an inch or two off when I throw it. So it should fall an inch or two to the right. That wouldn't be a big deal. But it's not the way it works. It's an inch or two off in the way I'm holding it when I'm winding up. And it ends up being 20 feet off when it lands. That's a major ratio. An inch, 2 inches off to 240 inches off later, landing 20 feet off? How to get multiplied by 100? So a little divergence the way I hold it when I'm throwing becomes a massive divergence the way it lands. Why? But the answer is because all that 60, 70 feet of flight, all the entire flight of the frisbee is created by just one flick of the arm. the entire flight is created by that one flick. Well, that means that one flick, that one throw is incredibly significant. It's creating this entire flight. So any little divergence in the way I throw it will have be massively multiplied in the way that it actually flies. Any small improvement, a 2-inch improvement in the way I throw, my technique of throwing, because that one little throw generates the entire flight, 2 inches of improvement in the way that I throw it could be 20 feet of improvement in the way that it actually flies and in the accuracy of how it lands, because this one throw is generating all that flight. Says Ramchal, this one stay in Olam Hazeh generates all of that infinite wealth, infinite pleasure of Olam Haba. Oh. So every small tweak, every small improvement in the way I launch in Olam Hazeh, there'll be massive improvement in the flight that I create in Olam Haba. And this is Yisod HaChassidus for Shorash Avodah Tima. This is a framework for building real Avodah. It starts by recognizing that the mitzvahs that I do, the expectation that Kadosh Baruch Hu has for me, Olam Hazeh, they are phenomenally significant, far beyond what they look like right now. Every good decision is generating Olam Haba. Wow. So every small improvement in the way that in the production, if Olam Hazeh produces my Olam Haba, and Olam Haba is so unbelievably significant, so there's no longer small mitzvahs. It's no big deal. Fell's already half in bed, realizes he hasn't davened Maariv yet. So they get yourself out of bed, put yourself together, dress ka'omer lifnei hamelach. Right? Does it really matter? Does anyone actually know? Right? It seems like such a small difference. But small changes, small positive changes in Olam Hazeh multiply out to immense impact in Olam Haba. Every small improvement here is of massive, massive, massive significance. He talks about the way goldsmiths and jewelers weigh the materials that they're working with. You go to buy a diamond for a couple of $1,000s. You look at the precision of the scales that they use. Why? Because every bit is of such immense value. Well, that's certainly true if each mitzvah, if each nisayon is the potential to generate chunks of Olam Haba. Imagine how significant every mitzvah and every enhancement of every mitzvah. It's so impactful. Think about that frisbee. The wind-up is Olam Hazeh, and the flight is the Olam Haba. And so he says, this puts everything into perspective. And the type of diktuk, every small difference, every small improvement in the means generate massive impact. There's more to say about this, and Emir Tzashem, in the next Vad, we'll have a chance to see where the Ramchal takes us as he begins to wrap up Perek Aleph and begins to prepare to see what is the first step. So once we have the conceptual framework in place, what's going to be the first step of practical growth that he's going to be pointing us towards? I both say thank you so, so much.
Thank you.